It's Wednesday, October 7th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 165 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 15 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
Is Wayne.
And my name is Pat.
For anyone who doesn't check the forum, just to explain something, Chris is not going to be with us for a couple weeks because, as he's mentioned on the show, one of his big interests is in
farting.
No, that's just what he does. Really, oh, not okay. Just like I breathe. That's not
an
interest.
It's an inherent ability.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's just non-activated power.
It's a racial trait for on. His chosen class.
Yeah.
He's very interested in fitness and physical training and personal training, all that stuff. And he's about to take a certification test. And apparently this test is fairly expensive, so he needs to pass it the first time. So he is spending the next several weeks straight doing nothing but studying for this test. So we are going to temporarily be Chrisless. He is coming back. And I, as far as I know, he's going to be at Fear the Con 3 and all that stuff.
Better but be.
For a couple shows, we will have improved sound quality and less farting.
Oh, I don't know about the less farting part.
Well, at least improved sound quality. Two announcements, real quick. First off, Fear the Con 3, we do now have dates. It will be at the same location in terms of where the con will be. So it'll be back at Memorial Hall in Blanchett Park, and we'll post details on that as it gets closer. Hotel, we're still working on. We've got two hotels we're looking at. We are not going to go back to the hotel we used last year because it was a disaster.
Well,
again.
We have problems with it, but I don't remember what the problems were. There were problems.
Reservations weren't
kept.
We're just not going to deal with it.
Getting the people that have already drank to the motel
Seeing as how we have a wing night in a place that is attached to a hotel that
and
is of the same
street.
Quality.
And there's another one across the street that's really highly rated. It's more expensive. Point being, we'll come back to that once we have it. But the information you guys probably want for right now is the dates. So here we go. Thursday, March 11th, 2010 will be the wing night at the Cybergs on Dorset, presuming I can get it reserved, which I'm sure I can. The con itself, we have already reserved this, will be back at Memorial Hall, Blanchett Park, on Friday, March 12th through Saturday, March 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are going to do something additional this year for anyone that wants to stick around. So if you want to just make this a full week off.
Okay, Dan, can I do my announcer voice for you first?
Okay.
Sunday.
Actually, Sunday through Wednesday.
Yeah, but that doesn't have the same flow.
All right. But Sunday, March 14th.
Flow B.
Through March 17th, which is a Wednesday. We are going to do an extended tour of the local stuff for anyone that wants to hang out. We'll probably keep the games going, maybe at people's houses or at the hotel rooms, but we're going to do stuff like check out the microbreweries, visit the wineries, go to some of the local pubs, go up in the arch, go to the zoo, whatever's open at that time of year. So, because a couple people last year stuck around for a day or two after the con and realized that despite its flyover reputation that St. Louis actually has some pretty cool stuff in it.
Yeah, we do have to live here. We do have to have interesting stuff to live amongst.
And so therefore, for anyone that's interested after the con, on Sunday the 14th, we're all going to sleep in, but on the 14th then through the 17th, we will do some local stuff. We haven't picked out exactly what yet, and I want to talk to some of the other people involved in organizing this because they have some ideas. But if you want to stick around for a while, come for the con, stay for the caves. That's what we've been calling it. That'll be immediately following it.
If you stay around till Wednesday, we could take them down to Dogtown and give them some green beer.
Is that St. Patty's afterwards?
March 17th.
Really?
Oh, wow. Huh. Didn't realize that.
Unless I'm just being stupid, I think March 17th is St. Patrick's Day.
You are stupid, but
that's true.
You may be accurate, though. I don't know. I didn't check that against any holidays when I was planning this. All right, second announcement. The guild that we have running on City of Heroes is still going strong. Super group.
Is it called something different?
It is called a super
villains?
Group.
No, they just call it super group.
Super group.
There's no individual term.
Right? I keep calling it a guild, and somebody got confused by that the other day. But yeah, the super group / guild, whatever you want to call it, still running. Villain side, Pinnacle server, City of Villains. And if you have ever had an account before and you want to check out where the game's at now, this weekend they're doing free account reactivation for any existing account. And on top of that, it's a double XP weekend.
Yeah. I don't even think you have to sign up or anything. I mean, as if you had a pre-existing account, download the client, log in with your old username and password.
Yeah, I think that's right. If not,
that's it. It just automatically reactivates. I've been through a couple of these for various people that have come back to the game. It's just automatically your account is log onable.
Yeah, so if you're interested in trying this out, if you log on this weekend, if you had an account before, it's completely free. And on top, that's double XP. So you'll shoot through the early levels and get a character caught up pretty quick. So if you're interested in doing that, I'll link to this in the show notes. Once again, Pinnacle Server, Villain Side.
And the four of us plan on pretty much being on all weekend long.
Yeah, we plan on putting our real lives, our outside lives, completely on hold. Well, instead of doing anything productive, we are going to be gaming all weekend.
Hell yeah.
All right, so spinning off of that, while I was on City of Villains last night or the night before, there were two other gentlemen that were on with me. I could give you the character names. I actually, truthfully told, don't even know their real names.
What is their character name?
It's Professor Ferrum.
Uh-huh.
And...
good guy.
What's it, Dark Dryad or the...
Thorn Dryad.
Thorn Dryad. I don't know.
Great, I do.
Great guys. Sorry. Great, yes. I was having a lot of fun talking to them. But they asked a question, which spun into a larger conversation that we were kicking around right before we started recording. Apparently this topic has some legs, so I want to see where we go with this. But we mentioned before that when we were originally writing Skies of Glass, the first time we played it back in 1995, we played it as a LARP. And this was before, I don't know when the term LARP was first used, but this was before I had ever even heard the term live action role playing.
And before we even heard that, you know, radioactive isotopes above a certain quantity were illegal to own and fully automatic weapons, you had to have all these licenses.
See, I'm really curious how this works. Having played in a recent version of Skies of Glass, I just don't know how that works as a LARP.
Well, here's how it...
the power of imagination.
Here's how it went. What we would do was we had character sheets, we had a rule system, and the rule system actually had a fair amount of crunch to it. I mean, this was no hero system, but it did have some crunch to it. This was not some quick play paper, scissors, rock thing. But at the time, Chad's parents were in the process of moving, and so he had a fairly large house, which was completely empty.
That was the greatest gamer pad in the world. A totally empty two-story large house with no parents and you're 18 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
No furniture either, but who cares?
But when for what we were doing, would have just gotten in the way.
Yeah.
And so what we would do is we, for a while in our role-playing, had been moving kind of in the direction of LARPing. And what I mean by that is we were getting more serious about the characters. At times, we'd find it easier just to grab a prop and show you how I'm going to do something instead of explaining it. Or we might have a side conversation where two people stand up and kind of act.
Didn't that all make sense?
I don't even think that LARP was sort of in our lexicon.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. I had never heard the term LARP at this point in our life.
Yeah.
So when we played Skies of Glass, what we found was we just ditched the table completely. That we would stand in the middle of the room and we would just imagine that we're wherever and we would act out the scene. Now, here's where the conversation goes. So fast forward 14 or 15 years, and I'm sitting there on Skype, and these two guys are asking me about Skies of Glass because, you know, they heard some of the recent stuff we've posted about it. And they said, why are you not writing the current version as a LARP? I got to thinking about that for a minute. And my response to them was in the form of a question of, what's a LARP? And now everyone's like, what's a live action role play? You just described what a LARP is. But I don't mean it that way. I mean, from a rule standpoint, what's a LARP? Here's my example. World of Darkness, the game that is probably the most heavily, at least in America, associated with LARPing. I realize that in the Nordic countries, LARPing is actually a really much bigger deal. It's mostly medieval stuff. And they can do cool things like actually have castle sieges with real castles. And we don't have real castles in America. We have Indian mounds, which aren't as much fun to defend. And somebody might consider that sacrilegious. But if you look at World of Darkness, which is probably the most popularly associated game with LARPing, at least in my experience with it, and I won't claim to have memorized the rule books inside and out, I've never found any rules on there for LARPing. I've never found anything in there that says, this is a LARP, and here's how you LARP. And here's how to reduce your character sheet to 3 stats on an index card and decide all your die rolls with paper, scissors, rock, and all the things that go into it. It's not in there. And now, Chad, you've told me that you have seen games that do actually have tips and instructions on how to LARP the game. You mentioned Chaosium's...
Call of Cthulhu.
Call of Cthulhu. You said it had some stuff in there on how to design costumes.
Yeah, and how to, you know... Like, this is how you make a 4-man Yogg-Soth whatever it's called, costume. And
so the costumes make sense, but I have to say, having never actually LARPed or watched anyone LARP, it seems kind of counterintuitive to have rules to LARP. Isn't LARPing essentially the ultimate freedom in a game?
No.
That you don't need the rules to do that?
No, not necessarily. I mean, what you're thinking of is a narrative game. And in a narrative game, more or less a role-playing game without rules, without crunch mechanic. I mean, there might even be a mechanic of who gets to talk and who gets to dictate what happens.
Right, pass the stick around.
Right, right. But we're talking like there really isn't any dice rolling or anything like that. And you can have a narrative LARP, or you can have a narrative sit-down tabletop
right.
role-playing game.
And in our case, I mean, we were, by every definition of the word back in 1995, LARPing Skies of Glass.
Mm-hmm.
Because we would stand up, we would act the scenes out, there was no table anywhere to be seen. But if somebody said, I'm going to shoot so-and-so, or I'm going to attempt to barter with so-and-so, we would go back to character sheets, which were sitting on the floor up against the wall of the sunroom.
My parents had a bar. Remember?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They had a wet bar, and it was in the living room, and we would have everything sitting on the bar. So it wouldn't even be a table. It was more literally just a sidebar that we would go to. Okay, reference, boom, roll, good,
dice,
go.
And then we go back to going straight back to the role play.
Okay, how many jokes did you make about, let's take a sidebar for this?
None.
We weren't that clever. And I have to say that, because you were asking, you know, it's like, well, the mechanics versus LARPing and all that. Yeah. I have to say that the...
Because it seems like it would be the ultimate freedom. You're not stuck behind a table. You're up. You're moving around. You're not limited by what you can describe. You don't know what you can do.
The only LARP I have ever watched that I wasn't a part of was a public LARP at a local gaming convention called Archon. And it was a vampire werewolf sort of LARP. And I think they do one every year.
It wasn't Vampire the Masquerade. But yeah, the gist of it was...
I thought it was.
I didn't think it was. But you had hunters... vampires,
werewolves,
and werewolves, and you didn't even necessarily know who was in the LARP. And
yeah,
the objective was to survive to the end of the weekend.
Right.
And they had different things where if you're a werewolf, the certain hand motion means that you're going
there's like given some hand symbols.
And if you're a hunter, then you'd have like some kind of a toy gun. And if you pull it out and shoot a Nerf dart or whatever it was to somebody, then you've killed that vampire or werewolf.
And from my understanding, from what I observed, there was actually no role playing whatsoever. It was all, you were playing a role, but you weren't role playing.
Huh.
And it was all combat. It was all like just, hunting and chasing and investigating and then combat and fighting.
Whereas, kind of like the old 80s movie Gotcha.
Yeah. Whereas the other thing that I've heard about, again, this is going to be sort of a vampire thing. I think it's called Mind's Eye Theater. I could be wrong. Where they do a LARP on stage. They do a role-playing game LARP on stage, and there isn't any dice because you're entertaining an audience. And people are watching this, so they're not going to stop and say, okay, paper, rock, scissors, here's my fake gun. Chester is blown apart by the gory spray of shrapnel from the shotgun.
So that's,
you know, it's a lot more narrative.
I was going to say that would be a 100% narrative then. If you're doing it in front of an audience with really no way to mechanically do it, you just sort of go with the flow and say, I do this, and then the guy has to react, say, oh, okay, we'll go with that. It's not scripted.
Well, that's my understanding.
I'm curious if you're doing that. At what point is it no longer a game? A play is not a game.
Improv is not a game.
Okay. And I don't want to, it's an interesting question, a little bit of a tangent. I don't know if I want to chase. But really,
because none of us are improv actors, and none of us are really LARPers.
But here's the thing, though.
But we are Fear the Boots, so.
What came to my mind as I was having this discussion with these two guys was that, first off, certainly a game that has less crunch is easier to LARP than a game that has a lot of crunch. It's easier if you have a game that has fewer dice, fewer stats. Not to say you couldn't LARP a really crunchy game.
Oh, I think you totally could. I think that you can LARP with a big enough budget, a large enough piece of land, and enough people, you can LARP War Machine or Warhammer 40K.
Well, okay, fair enough. But
if they could do it with the Civil War, we can get mechs out there, people. We just got to bring it together.
But, you know, I'm afraid this may be a tangent, Dan, but I have the curious question of, do you consider Civil War reenactments LARPing? Because I'm kind of curious about that.
You know, I dated a Civil War reenactor in high school, and at first blush, I would go, oh, no, no, they're just doing it. But to hear her stories and how deep these people get into
it. They do all seem to have rules. The battle is not predetermined. I mean, they're reenacting things. Some of them are predetermined. Right?
Well, I was
going
to say,
will always win,
I think
but
they're... Yeah, so the few I've seen or the few reenactors I've talked to, I'm sure it's different from group to group. It's always been very scripted.
Yeah.
That at this point, this person falls dead, and you try to even find out, okay, I'm private so-and-so, and at this point in the battle, he dies.
Battles aside, they also role-play, whether you want to call it a game or not, I don't care, but they role-play their characters in camp, where they're not all fighting. I mean, like I said, I dated my girlfriend was a Civil War reenactor. Obviously, she's not out on the front lines in a Union uniform.
Right.
Actually, I think she was with the Confederate side. But, God, I don't even know what she did. But she was hopefully not a camp follower, but one of Hooker's girls.
Yeah. No, Pat, that's who, not what.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
she worked in the camp, and, and there's this whole camp life thing that they do.
Well, that was one of the tangents. That was one of the tangents they brought up was in our conversation is the SCA LARP, the Society for Creative Anachronisms. Bruno doesn't know what it is, but it's the SCA LARP.
I think when people beat each other with swords, not necessarily.
Well,
but I think the SCA does LARP.
And I don't want to get tangled up in this definition of what counts as a LARP, because that really wasn't the issue we were discussing. The conclusion that I kind of came to as I was thinking this through is in most cases, what defines a game as a LARP versus a normal tabletop role-playing game?
Well, I think that's where you're...
Is public image. That's it. You know, when you say to somebody, I play Vampire the Masquerade, they presume you're LARPing. When you say to somebody, I play Dungeons & Dragons, they presume it's around a table. It's purely reputation. There is
even though you can flip the two
easily.
Yes,
even though... And when I was thinking this through, it's like, okay, let's say for a minute I wanted to write the revised Skies of Glass. It's like fourth or fifth iteration, whatever it's on. As a LARP, what would I write differently? And the answer is nothing except the supporting text of here's how we play the game, of here's how you LARP it out, here's how to make a costume. The actual game itself would not change at all. And I think there are two things, and I mentioned one of them earlier, that enable a game or increase the likelihood of a game turning into a LARP. One of them is the simplicity of the rules, because it's more crunch is harder to LARP, not impossible, just harder. Secondly, it's the amount of detail that is put into the individual experience, not combat charts and guns and equipment, but what is life like? What is the society you live within like on a day-to-day basis? And Chad, you were pointing out that Vampire meets that wonderfully in two different ways. First off, not just by having the detail on the different clans and the politics and the interactions and what daily life is like for Vampire, what your personal demons are, but also because of the fact that it's a masquerade.
Yeah. Well, I said that there are two things going for Vampire the Masquerade that really help make it a LARP. One is it has fairly simple rules. It doesn't have a huge amount of crunch to it. But the fact that you are playing a vampire who is pretending to be human and who is hiding. So what that means is that the four of us sitting around these mics can go to our local bar, order some beers, and we can role play all night long in character as vampires. And as long as we're not noshing on somebody's neck... No one would know that we're doing
it. We could be LARPing four vampires that run a podcast right now.
And you would never know.
You know, it sounds kind of interesting. I like that concept. But to be honest, I don't think that would be for me. I can't see myself going to a bar. I'm going to a bar and hanging out with you, I want to be talking about whatever we're going to be talking about.
Let me put it this way. I read a story about a guy, it might be a blog post, who he had some friends who were trying to get him into their Vampire the Masquerade LARP. And they did go to bars and stuff. And he was like, okay, well, I mean, I dig bars at any rate, so it won't be a wasted night. And he goes there, and he's watching them, and he orders a drink, and he's talking to the bartender. The bartender's like, yeah, they say they do the rounds of the bars, and they come in here about once a month or whatever. And he's like, yeah, I can't stand them. He's like, really? Why? And it's like, yeah, because they don't order any drinks.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because they just come in, they're there to game.
Well, see, I've never LARPed, but I just can't wrap my head around your example there. It's like, well, you're sitting in a bar for 4 hours, 6 hours, whatever. LARPing, but what are they doing? I mean,
what do you do in a bar for 4 hours non-LARPing? You hang
well,
out.
Well, I don't, but you, personally, well, yeah, I don't spend the time. But I mean, if you sit there and eat, you drink beer, eat chips, and
then you hang
whatever.
With your friends and you talk and you joke around and you
talk about whatever
so
comes up.
That's now, what imagine Vampire the Masquerade is. You just go to a bar and get faced, and that's.
I don't need rules for that.
If that's what you want to make it, that's not it. I mean, I think that oversimplifies it to a great deal.
And I'm just used to, you know, like.
What do you do when you role play? I mean,
when I role play at a table, I mean, I'm sitting at a table, but I'm talking about my characters
doing things other than sitting at the table.
Let me give you an example, Pat, that may make this a little bit easier, because the games that we've role played, at least recently, are generally so far detached from the modern day. You couldn't role play them out of the house.
I get what he's saying about that.
Let's say we were doing a role playing game about young GIs that just came home from World War II. So we go to a bar, we order some drinks, a real bar, we order real drinks, but instead of talking about what we did this past week...
I have to interrupt you because I just came up with the perfect example.
I've got to interrupt you because I think I just figured it out. In your story that you just said there, those guys failed at their masquerade because the bartender
totally spotted them.
He knew who they were and he hated them. So they totally failed at integrating into society and pretending to be human. He knew what they were.
Nerds, yes.
So they sucked at it.
Yeah, pun intended, yes. But let me put to you this way. You go into a bar with your wife.
Okay.
What do? You hang out with your wife, you have a couple drinks, you have some chips, and you talk about
Get her drunk, then I take her in a corner and...
No, you don't.
Okay, never
mind.
That's what you do with...
That's what you wish you would let me do.
Okay.
And you go home. Now, what if you decided that you're going to try and spice things up in your marriage? What if she goes to the bar first and she takes on this sexy persona? Maybe she wears a dress she wouldn't normally wear.
And
maybe she uses a name.
You don't know her.
And you pretend you don't know her. And then you do this whole role play. Oh, you're role playing. You're LARPing. Only there's sex involved afterwards.
Well, I thought there was sex involved.
I see where you're going with this. And if I've seen your chest. I'm not touching that thing.
I have. It's like a carpet.
But here's the thing. We're way off the original topic.
Oh, this is awesome, though.
The point being, what separates a LARP from a non-LARP is really how the public perceives it and how you choose to play it. The rare exceptions that we mentioned earlier, like the Chaosium thing, generally speaking, you pick up a book, there's nothing in that book that says this is a LARP, and here's how you LARP, and here's why you can't play it at the table, or you should play at the table and can't LARP it. When we put out Skies of Glass, if you choose to LARP the Tier 1 rules, which would probably be the easiest just because they're the most quick play, or you choose to even simplify them further to where you can put your stats on an index card and decide everything with paper, scissors, rock, that's what a LARP is. You know, that's all that separates in terms of a rule book, a LARP from a non-LARP, generally speaking.
The more active LARPs sound like they might actually be fun. It's just that, I guess it's the example you're giving, Chad. You know, if people have fun with that, more power to them.
Totally. So
it is definitely wouldn't be my thing. I would find that very, very boring.
I cannot.
And I find watching football very, very boring as well. But, you know, obviously I'm in the minority on that.
Yeah.
I cannot LARP in public for several reasons. And this was something
else. Because you're just so damn good at it.
This was something else that these guys were asking me about. We have mentioned on Fear the Boot, and I don't think we've ever really expressed we're not joking. And first off, and let me come back to the point in a second about the things people may think we're joking about, we're not. I just can't do it, okay? I have too much of the, I'm afraid.
Too self-conscious.
I'm too self-conscious.
We can't even play a regular game in public.
I can't play a regular game even when, like, we're at Dave's house and his wife comes downstairs. Play stops until she's gone.
Yeah. When I joined the group, I mentioned that to Chad. And when I first joined the group, I mentioned that to Chad, and he said he had never really noticed it to that degree. The next time she came down, he looks over at me and goes, "Oh my God, you're right."
But here's
just all shut up.
People stop for different reasons.
Here's the
other
thing.
I have my reasons.
People may not realize we're not joking about this. The whole Dark Lord of Denny's thing, being night owls throughout all of our teen and early 20 years, used to go into Denny's or other places, because one of the few places open late at night, and there would be a group in there with their capes and fake fangs disrupting the dining experience of everyone else in there. That really happened. We are not making that up.
Yeah, that's another reason I couldn't do it in public. When I'm in a restaurant and you have these obnoxious people, whether they're obnoxious because they're drunk, I don't care why they're obnoxious. They're interrupting my meal. And so common consideration, I don't want to do that to someone else.
And that was the problem, was they had no boundaries. They had no sense that I'm not interested in being part of your game. In fact, completing Chad's story, he started earlier, when that friend went into the bar where they were LARPing, he ended up getting into it with one of the LARPers. And the bartender threw all the LARPers out
because nobody was buying any
food. Nobody buying drinks. Yeah, and this guy and his character or whatever wasn't paying sufficient
homage to the lord
to the prince of the town or whatever. And so they started trying to give him all his crap. And so he just called the bouncers over and had all the LARPers thrown out because this guy was buying drinks because the LARPers were just pissing people off. Yeah. But the second thing is, there used to be a coffee shop in South City, St. Louis. Couldn't tell you the name of it. I've never really been the hipster type. Okay, I've never been the type to hang out at coffee shops. I don't even really like coffee. But I was hanging out with a group of people, Chad and I both were, that were kind of into that scene. And this place at first was kind of a goth bar. Well, right about that time, Vampire the Masquerade hits big. So it goes from being a goth coffee shop, it goes from being kind of hipster to goth. Then from goth to now it's a vampire bar.
And then the werewolves came along and kicked the vampire players out. And that wasn't the LARP part.
Yeah.
That was just the vampire. The werewolf players were bigger guys.
Business is a cruel bitch in this town, I'm telling you.
Do you guys realize how far out of left field this is for people like me and Pat?
This is not a joke. Because you guys are hayseeds.
Seriously, let me...
No, I. You know what? There was a lot of LARPing in Springfield, where I'm from, Springfield, Missouri. They do it down...
They did it at
the town square. Downtown in the square. That's where the LARPers were. That's where the vampire players were. I've seen them.
So this coffee shop, which at one point was pretty cool, gets overrun by all these vampire LARPers who have no boundaries, who are just in there and think anyone else who's in there is part of their LARP, whether they want to be called? Or not. I cannot remember.
Is it Gothic Cafe?
I don't remember. Because it went through name changes.
Yeah, it was on Hampton.
Then, of course, you also have the real crazies who actually thought they were vampires. And then what ended up happening was all the people that were either werewolf LARPing or were equally crazy and thought they really were werewolves came in, and because, as Chad said, they were scarier people, ran out all the vampire LARPers. This is a real story. This is why Fear the Boot traditionally has made so much fun of LARPers, is because our experience...
St. Louis LARPers are crazy?
I guess, but our experience with LARPers, even though we LARPed ourselves in Skies of Glass... We did it on the down low, in a house, bothering nobody. And all of our experiences have been with these people that are just crazy and have no boundaries.
So it looks to me like what we've got here is maybe a limited definition of what LARPing really is. Because I think we're going to find this out, you know, when this episode goes live. I'm sure people will comment about this. But I think we're focusing on the vampire type masquerading, vampire / werewolf masquerading or LARPing. But you've also got the other things like, I've seen or heard of, you know, like fantasy LARPing, you know, yeah. You mentioned SCA and everything else like that. And I think those maybe they're different because I think traditionally you're not going to go into a bar or you're not going to go downtown St. Louis in square. You're not going to find them there. They're not really going to be disrupting the public in general. They're basically off on their own because they're wearing wizard uniforms and they're throwing Nerf lightning bolts at each other, so they're away from each other. It's like you've got two different camps, or maybe more than two, but so we've been really focused on this vampire stuff, and I think that's maybe that is the biggest part, and maybe that's where really LARPing got its start.
You know, I don't think it's the biggest part, but I think you hit on something there. The other guys are out in the field, the people with boundaries you wouldn't have run into.
Well, I think that they've got boundaries only because, they're societal boundaries.
They're on grandpa's land.
They're like, we can't dress up in our armor and our robe and go out and not be just like totally, stared at in public. Well, so we've got to go out to a field.
I think part of it is the experiences you had with the people that had no boundaries, maybe because you would have never noticed them if they had boundaries.
See,
they wouldn't have been loud and obnoxious.
These are the people that need to have their Renfest every month, where they can take over a little town and build it. and it can be Vampireville, and they can go to town, and they're not bothering the rest of society.
Yeah, I wonder why we don't hear about anything like that. I mean, we've got here in St. Louis,
I'm sure
we've
got there
Pirate
are.
Fest, we've got Ren Fair. You know, Kansas City has Ren Fair. I've never
you
heard
know what
of
I
a,
think,
a Vampire Fair.
I would have to admit I'd go. I bet that there is. Especially with the internet the way it is now, there are all kinds of clubs. At this side and the other, I would not have any doubt at all that if there's a large, say, vampire LARPing,
that's what the Camarilla is.
A community, it's, and they do that, and they have like they do sort of like that. They rent out a place, or they go to a place where
they
it's
just
all
can't
friendly
have a fair because
they
can't
just get together, and it's
night.
All their you know their type of people, and it doesn't bother everybody else. It's just whenever it spills over into the public in general that you know you really see it, and then it's called secret societies, and I'm sure that you know the Masons are involved and the Illuminati. So
you're saying Aleister Crowley was a LARPer?
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, that's really cool, but...
Oh, wow. Totally. You've seen the secret handshakes and stuff they do. It's just, you know, I'm surprised that they haven't come up with a rock, paper, scissors app for the iPhone yet, because you know... Okay, there you go. That had to be one of the first ones they worked on, so... And, you know, they can take their iPhones and put a few gears on them and make it all steampunky. And then,
I can just vomit.
And they're
all
ready.
Over it.
Yeah. And they're ready to go.
Look at you talking like a big boy.
How's that for content, Dan?
There you go.
Changing gears completely. let's see if you can keep talking.
Uh-huh.
All right, let's get to that's role playing related topic. That was a role playing related topic.
Now we're going to do banter. We're switching now.
Well, actually, that was supposed to be banter.
So rollerblading.
Because, like I said, the question I was left with as I was thinking this through was what makes a game a LARP, and the answer is really nothing. How you play it.
You
can LARP any game.
And then what is a LARP? Where do you, I do not want
to get into that.
Well, the one thing that you said,
our shock either and our misunderstanding about.
Well, yeah, I think minimally the one thing you said earlier is I think having never done a LARP, but just thinking about it.
How much of it have you seen? Because you mentioned
I spent some time in the town square in Springfield just because of what I was doing, some of the school activities and extracurricular activities I had down there. So I was around them, and I sort of sat back and observed. And I mean, you could see them. They were the ones wearing the capes, this and the other. And I saw the whole, they go up to each other and do the rock, paper, scissors thing. And so that, but I haven't done it. But that's just about to say, I think minimally to have a LARP, I think you've got to have a very simplified, you know, mechanic system so that you can actually resolve things. You know, you get into a situation and you resolve things that way. So it's not just predetermined or it's not just totally narrative where it's like you say, you know, oh, well, I'm going to do this. And the guy says, okay, whatever. So you've got to have some very minimal system like that.
Why can't it be totally narrative?
Well, maybe it could be, but I think if you're going to be role playing LARPing.
I'm shutting this conversation down. Here's why.
Okay.
There is one thing on this show I do not want to get into, and I've been very careful in many recent topics to avoid, which is the arguments over definitions of terms that are fundamentally colloquial. Because, oh my freaking...
That's a bowler.
The conversations, the winery that comes out when what counts as a role-playing game? It's just ridiculous. It is stupid. It is retarded. I'm sorry to anyone listening who's mentally handicapped, but it is retarded, okay? It just gets so stupid. And the fights that rage on RPGNet or any major forum out there that rage even amongst the industry people that I've been privy to, which I won't tell you details on because I'm not supposed to, but it's stupid. The same thing's going to happen with the LARP. Where do you draw the line between LARP and theater, and why can't it be narrative, and how much crunch does there have to be before it's not a game anymore? Everybody
can't have a narrative game because a narrative game has no game.
It's basically everybody's britches are going to drop. Their nerd penis is going to come out.
Ooh, can we continue?
And
yeah, it's interesting, the topic, to be honest, it doesn't matter.
No, it leads nowhere. Here's the thing. It's one of those concepts. You intuitively understand it. We don't need to define it. It's just not even worth going there nowhere productive. It never has and never will.
It's like when I ask these questions of Chad, it's not because I'm looking for a what is that line. It's I'm curious where the line is for him. To be honest, it doesn't matter where the line is to him. I have the line for me. He has the line for him. And I don't care what that line is.
Now, that I'll agree on. Because we have games, for example, with people in the past where to them, the moment you're speaking in first person or the old joke of the minute you stand up, it's LARPing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas to other people... that's just helping. That's just acting out a scene. That's not LARPing. But to some people, the minute you talk in first person or stand up or pull out a prop, you've gone into a full blown LARP. For other people, you have to be in costume, you know, disrupting Denny's before it's a LARP.
And that's something that I really miss out of our current game. Our current game is a very sit down sort of game. Sit down, stay down, occasionally talk in, you know, the first person and all that. I try and do as much as I can. But I remember our old games and different gaming groups I've been in where you stand up. You act it out. I mean, you don't necessarily pull out the cape, the props, and go out to Grandpa's field and you're magic missiling people with rolls of tinfoil.
Or even stay stood up for very long.
Yeah, I really do miss that about it. Where if there was, I mean, what we used to do is we would sit around and we would role play around a table. But when a scene got interesting, when a scene got intense, we would say, okay, let's. I don't even remember how we phrased it. Like, let's take it over there, or let's stand up and act this out. You know,
we're having an argument in a briefing room, so there's a table over there with no chairs around it. Let's go stand around that.
Yeah,
and you would kind of act the scene out in the first person. And some people say, "Well, wait a minute, you've just crossed over into a LARP."
Thank God.
Whereas other people,
what's wrong with that?
Whereas other people would say, "Well, no, you still went back to the table and sat back down.
You didn't put in your vampire fangs.
It's not a LARP." And I don't even want to get into that kind of wankery because it is just stupid. It is a waste of time.
And none of you can put capes on because I'm the only one sitting here that actually owns a cape.
I've got a cape.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's old. I don't have it here. It's down at home, but I had one. Oddly enough, I went as a vampire for Halloween one year when I was a kid, so I had a cape.
You know what's funny?
It all ties together. LARPed for Halloween.
Dawn has a cape. I don't have a cape.
You can't even fall back for stuff like this on like Merriam-Webster's dictionary, because I was once trying to shut up one of these debates about what is a role-playing game, but I went out and...
Was someone wrong on the internet?
Well, I was just trying to stop it. What was wrong was not their point. The wrong was the fact that it was even occurring. It's like if someone's beating their wife. It's not whether the punch was good. This shouldn't be happening at all.
Oh, you give points for skill on that.
And so I was trying to just stop the debate. So I go out to Merriam-Webster's dictionary and look up the three words role, play, and game. I couldn't even use it because game in the dictionary definition specifically includes winners and losers.
Mm.
Well, who wins and loses in a role-playing game?
So does that mean like Arkham Horror is not a game? Because it's a cooperative? Well, I mean, I guess you...
Because you can all win or all lose.
Yeah. And there is a scoring aspect at the end that everybody ignores.
The way we role-play, where it's not the GM versus the players, it's not even the players versus the players, there's no winner or loser. Either you had a good time or you didn't.
No, we've had games where there are losers.
Either all win or we all lose.
Yeah, we all win or we all lose.
But you do so by having fun, not a mechanic of the game.
Or not having fun.
Yeah, or not having fun, not by a mechanic of the game. And so I quickly found that even the dictionary can't answer this, and I just have to accept it's the fuzzy logic thing. At the loss of which hair is somebody balding? And I...
You know, I don't know. Let's compare.
I'm surprised. Yeah, I'm surprised with the amount of PC-ness that this society has come to these days that they haven't redefined game, because now you've got all these instances where, you know, kids games, they don't worry about who wins or loses and everybody gets a trophy anyway. So that right there. Yeah. I mean, why haven't they redefined the word game for what it really is these days? And then we could use that example, by God.
Sure, it's the commies. It's the commies bringing down society.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into a completely different topic.
Commies?
Sure.
No. Not gonna go there.
Let's get into the differences between Napoleon and Snowball. Now, actually, what we are going to talk about, however, is saving a game. Let's say you're running a game, and you recognize that there's a definite loss in momentum and interest. People are more checked out than checked in. The plot's just not as interesting as it used to be. How do you save a game that is falling apart? It's like marriage counseling for your group.
Well, I think that the first part is not what you do to save it, but it is like marriage counseling. First thing,
you know, there's a problem.
You have to identify the warning signs.
Well, I'd say even before that,
you have to find a gaming group.
No,
you have to put some pants on and leave that house.
I agree with you.
What game are you playing?
a boring one, apparently.
We'll get here in a second to talking about the warning signs And then also, once you figured out the warning signs, figuring out the cause of the loss of momentum, before we even get into that, one of the first questions I put down as I was thinking this through, is every game even worth saving?
No.
That sometimes a loss of momentum may be... Because
the game is inherently bad.
Well, yeah.
It also depends on what we're asking here, too. Because I see this from two different perspectives. Either we're saying, how do you save an individual session?
No, I'm not talking about a session. I'm talking about a campaign.
Okay. Yeah, I see questions for both aspects.
Right. I'm talking about a campaign. When I say a game, I don't mean a game sitting.
Okay. I think you can do we could do an entire episode on how to save a session. Because,
to be honest, that was my original question. Yeah, I was more
it's not a matter of over the course of many months or weeks, but how can I make effective changes to save a session in the next 10 minutes?
Well, maybe we'll talk about that next episode. But this episode, we're talking about how to save a campaign. The campaign itself is falling apart. Listen, the first question I came up with is, you've got to ask yourself, do you even want to save or resurrect this game? Because, and I think this is a question that everyone's going to answer differently based on their individual taste. To some people, the length and persistence of a game is a virtue in and of itself. To other people, it's either a problem, they actually like changing games fairly quickly, or they don't really care. If the game goes one session or 100 sessions, as long as they're having fun, it doesn't matter. But I've known people where that stick-to-itness is really important to them. They've been playing the same D&D campaign for 15 years, and that's how they like their gaming. And this is one of the places you've got to go first, saying, look, is the storyline at its end? Is this something we're really just better off moving on from? Is this something we even want to put the energy into saving? Or is it just time to let this go?
Okay, let's frame it like this, Dan. Recently, the Sky's at Glass game. We were all into the story quite a bit. But then things outside of the game entirely caused us to have, you know, off weeks here and there, to the point that we'd go 2 or 3 weeks without a game, then we'd come back. And that's a case where we all wanted to know the story. If that situation arises, all your players want to know the story, they want to know what's going on, but something either outside of the game or something in the game itself has caused that issue. Your players are still invested enough, they want this to work, but it's not working for them right now.
And that actually ties in pretty well to what we probably need to pose as the second point here, Chad, as you brought up. What are the warning signs your game is losing momentum?
Well, she just never calls anymore. Really.
You know,
the first was if someone other than Chad is on their phone the whole time.
Table focus is not always a perfect indicator because sometimes people just want to have fun in side conversations. But focus is a good start.
And you can't misinterpret that, too. You can't think, good game, lots of focus. Now we're this week and nobody has any focus. Everyone's jacking around. Just that one time, maybe it's just a slow day. Maybe everybody's just not on their ball. Or maybe, usually I notice that if we miss a week, the next week coming back, it's really hard to get focused because you haven't seen your friends in a week and you want to talk and you want to chit chat and you want to do that sort of thing.
But I think
when it's a systemic problem,
when it's a persistent distraction, persistent lack of focus, side conversations, people playing around with apps on their phones, whatever, you've probably got a sign that momentum is slowing down. Another one is watch the interaction between your players. If they seem to be getting more short-tempered, if they seem to be getting less involved, if they are now abbreviating their actions, they're less interested in the world, they're less interested in each other's characters.
If they're bickering and not in character bickering.
Yeah, not in character bickering. I don't even care. I just go there and shoot the guy. There's no investment or interest in the world. I think these are all signs you're losing your game.
Yeah, I'd say also after the game. If it's a game everyone's really into afterwards on the way out to the car, they're doing nothing but talking about the game, then you've probably still got some momentum going. If afterwards they're packing up and getting out the door as quickly as possible, you've got a problem.
Well, and I think that's why I've always said that the post game is really, really important. And gamers who have been gaming for a long, long time always forget to do the post game. It's not so much that we're ready to jump out the door, but we talk, oh, yeah, the game was good, great, so, you know, what are you doing this? Hey, let's get together for wings this week or whatever.
And it's like, it's not a big deal for you and me because we see each other every day.
We're always talking about the game.
But it's like, Pat, I see you twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
if you have the post game where it's like, okay, what did you guys like? What did you guys not like? What are you unclear about? What, you know, is there any confusion that as a game master I can clear up? And, you know, it doesn't have to be that sort of cut and dry, but you just have a conversation with your players. You talk to them, get some feedback from them.
And don't get defensive.
Yes, I think that's the big thing. If you're the type of person to get defensive about it, like if somebody's constructively criticizing you, I think it's human nature to kind of like claw back a little. Best to just not say anything. Well, what is your feedback? It's this, it's this.
Maybe okay, you would have enjoyed it more if you weren't on your phone, Chad.
Yeah.
Well, let's, though, stress both sides of that equation. On the one hand, the person that's listening has to be open to criticism and not get defensive. But conversely, the person that's stating it
has to be constructive.
Being a dick to somebody is not going to help anything. Yeah. It's just going to mess up friendships.
I think my overall point, though, is that if you have this continual conversation after every game, this communication with your players, then what happens is little problems turn into big problems. That's how it always goes. So what you can do is you can correct the little problems. Maybe it's something wrong with your game that you can adjust. Maybe it's something wrong with a player or players or a misunderstanding that you can clarify and you can ask them to adjust. But if you don't have these conversations after every single game, it's not going to be a matter of adjusting a little problem week after week after week. It's going to be everything's going along, and then the next thing you notice, you're in the middle of your game, and everybody's heads down, playing with their phone. People are talking about, you know, whatever.
Or people are skipping weeks.
People are skipping weeks. People aren't focused. People aren't into it. People aren't role-playing. People are expecting you to... And suddenly, you're as a game master, you're just going to notice. It's just going to happen one day. It's like everything's going good, and in the middle of a campaign, you just get this realization. It's like you make your perception check, and it dawns on you, and you're like... Oh, crap. We have big problems. It's easier to fix a little problem every week than it is major big problems.
I came up while I was thinking about this with 7 possible causes of loss of momentum in a game. And then I wrote some solutions down below.
I knew this is going to be a multiple step process.
It's not, with Dan, it's always charts and graphs and filling out forms. To Dan, the ultimate solution to any role playing game problem. Bureaucracy.
Yeah.
I thought it was numbered
red tape.
What's funny is that I'm actually a horribly disorganized person in general.
Let us lead by example, but not by lists.
The first one is personal drama or burnout that has nothing to do with the gaming group. Somebody in the gaming group or multiple people in the gaming group, or worst of all, the game master is dealing with something emotionally or socially that has nothing to do with the game, but keeps them from being able to focus on or enjoy the game, just as they're unable to focus on or enjoy probably a lot of other things in their life.
The game isn't going to solve those problems.
No,
you got to get your shit together before the game.
Well, especially if it's the GM. If the GM is out of it, then the players...
Or just accept the game's dead.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do to fix this without fixing the broader problem. And honestly,
Joey stabbed Bobby last night. Now they're both sitting at your table.
Well, or
how do you game master around that?
Well,
one?
Or even let's say it has nothing to do with anyone with the group. Someone's just diagnosed with a terrible disease. Somebody's mom just died.
Mom just died. They need to gut it out. We're gaming.
Well, I mean, a good example of that is just last week, my parents' dog died. So I had to leave in the middle of the game, and the game kind of just fell apart after I left.
Imagine if it had been your dog that had died. And my point is, there's all kinds of major problems that can occur outside of the game.
Actually, don't imagine that. That's kind of sucking.
Well, yeah. My point being.
Yeah.
But I don't think on these, a lot of times, anything you can do to save it. That really what you have to look at is, okay, we're going to have to take a break until this sorts itself out. And it may be a long break.
Or maybe excise the problem.
Yeah, and what you may have to decide is, look, is there a way we can continue the game without the person, or is there a way we can take sufficient notes and write down enough things, kind of little mental cues about where we were at in the plot and where we're at in our characters, so that 2 months from now, when we're past this, we can pick it up and go again. And some groups can do it, some groups can't. I have found game resurrection to be very, very hard.
Well, and honestly, you have to be fair, and I'm going to be the brutal asshole here.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, big shocking surprise.
First time for everything, but go ahead.
But say you have 6 people sitting around the table, and one of the person's mother died. Well, that's going to really affect the game. and they've got to take some time off. They got to deal with that. And you know what? That problem is more important than the game. Family first every time.
Completely agree.
But that doesn't mean that the other five people have to stop gaming.
Well, they may have to stop that game depending on who was running it or something.
Well, but, I mean, if he was running it, sure.
If it's not the GM, though.
You know, you have a one in five chance of that happening. But you know, all that the ridiculousness aside, maybe a person has to take some time off. That's fine. You just game around. It's all in our imaginations anyway. It's not like we're playing an MMO and we just lost the main healer.
Yeah, and we're getting some really specific examples. I think the most important thing is to figure out why has your game started
why
failing?
Why has this guy's mom died?
No.
What can we do to cure death?
That's your example, is that she has died. I think the important thing is figuring out why has the game lost momentum. It could be a different reason for each person. Too much combat for, you know, Chad.
We've got all this.
That was of the list.
Personal drama was number one.
Mm-hmm.
Item number two is this isn't what the GM wanted out of the game. When you're a GM and you come up with a game, at least I do this. I just guess I'm projecting that every other one else does too. Maybe they don't. I don't know. But you have some sense of kind of what you want out of it, not how it's going to go. I'm not talking about a railroad, but there's a certain kind of experience, a certain set of subjects you want to explore.
This is the message I want to put out.
Or even just you really want everyone to get into their characters or see some neat things in the setting or have some really. And that's just not happening. The people are just not off the rails, but a game is occurring that is not the one that you wanted to run. And because of that, the game master has now lost interest because the type of game they wanted to run is not the type of game that is taking place around the table.
I'd say that I've been in games where one or two people or players have lost interest, and you can kind of still go on. You can do things to get the attention back, but man, when the game master's out of it, that game is sunk. Because they're the ones who are driving it. They're the ones who are, you know, setting it and making the interesting things that happen. The players are the ones that are doing the interesting things in the game. But
and it's a hard conversation to have because how do you say
your game sucks?
No, not that. But how does a game master say to five players, you're not playing my game right?
Right.
It's a very hard conversation to have.
And you know, that is the conversation. I mean, it's like that episode that we did years back where we were talking about the kind of person it takes to be a game master. It's a control freak.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody who wants to be in control, wants to control the game, who has a story to tell and a specific way of telling it. So, yeah, I've been in that situation before where I've been running a game and the players aren't playing the kind of game that I want to run, but I have to be very flexible when I run a game because I understand that how I want a game and what I want out of a role-playing game is the minority. No combat, narrative game, basis in reality, that sort of thing. Not everybody wants that out of a game. Very few people want that out of role-playing. And I have to like kind of come out and give people what they want when I role-play.
There's certainly something to be said for flexibility. Because if this is not what you want, maybe you just have to adapt to that. Take a deep breath, let go of your sacred cow, and say, okay.
But I like my cow.
This is just a different type of game. And presuming you're not an inflexible person or whatever, maybe you can handle that. Maybe you can also say to the players, hey, this is the kind of game I was hoping for. It's not headed that direction. Is there a way we can put this back on track? And we'll keep going with the causes here. But as I was thinking through the solutions, one of the things that everyone has to accept is that if the number one purpose of you guys getting together is to have fun, then you may have to just accept a little bit of hand waving that breaks continuity. For example, one of the things that I put further down was, I'll just skip ahead, was disinterest in your own character. I rolled up a character I didn't like. Now, because of where the plot is, the group in character is paranoid and being chased by the entirety of the world. This is like Blues Brothers. Nobody is on their side. They have no good reason to trust anyone. But Chad says to me, Dan, I just don't like this character. He's not what I expected. He's boring. I'm losing interest in the game. I'm going to start playing Pocket Tanks instead of what you're doing or whatever. And at that point...
Awesome. I bought the full version, by the way.
He'd never say it out loud. He'd just do it.
Yeah.
Mm. But at this point, I think what the group has to accept is a little bit of hand waving and just say, okay, that guy's gone. This guy's here. He's just always been there. Or you meet him in a bar. You're working with him now. Don't even worry about why. Just keep the game going, give a minimal explanation just so you can role play a consistent story, but don't sit there and try too hard.
Or just say that he has always been this way, which is actually the new way that we're playing for the first time this week.
Yeah, or whatever. But accept a little bit of hand waving, because the game, I think, oftentimes is more worth saving than your suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
I would say in that case, though, you need to actually look at the person, too, and make sure it really is just their character. Maybe they're just not interested in the story you're telling.
That was number three. This ain't what the player expected.
Exactly. And they have a character all set, but they're not into the story, so they think it's the character.
I pull out a game and I say, you know, this is going to be intense character drama, or give that impression for some reason, and this is not what anyone expected. Give a video game example. When I picked up Star Ocean Till the End of Time, it's a game set in the far future. I'm expecting laser guns, spaceships, and stuff like that. And instead, you spend almost the entirety of the game in medieval villages swinging swords with knights and kings and princes. And there were many things I didn't like about Star Ocean Till the End of Time. But one of the things that really messed the game up for me was I did not expect this in the game. That's not the game I thought I bought. Pat, how do you solve a problem like that?
Well, I think, especially in that case, from the player standpoint, that if they are sort of floundering with what you're doing, take the cue from that and do something completely different. You know, throw at them a lighthearted adventure, a comedy type adventure that's just kind of funny, or just, you know, it doesn't have to be long or whatever, but just to break up the pace, you know, because variety is the spice of life kind of thing. And I remember instances of that, because I'm that guy that you were saying earlier on. I'm the guy that came from the long term campaigns, as I've said before, you know, where the campaigns go on indefinitely. So, and we have that problem. You'd be going along, everything be great, but then we just get into a rut, and it'd just be, you know, we would start to lose interest, and the GM would realize that. And then, you know, what we'd do is the next adventure that we went on was just sort of, it was just off the wall, and kind of, it was just fun. It was different. Generally, it almost always had the effect of re-energizing us back into the campaign. And we realized, hey, you know, this is fun. These are the kind of interactions with the other players that we missed and that we're not used to having, you know, because we were just kind of in a slump and it was whatever. Or especially after a real heavy one, like we had a couple in, you know, say an adventure that was just, it was just really heavy content. And the fact that it was like, you know, a lot happened, it was kind of depressing and whatever like that. So just pick me up. So just that kind of thing, just bounce back and forth between, you know, to sort of, you know, from one extreme to another, just to keep it interesting, just post-game, to keep it lively.
Post-game.
It is. And, you know,
in the post-game conversation, you should hear things like this come out.
Yeah.
That I'm losing
communication
interest.
I think the things that to take from this whole episode that we were talking about, communication is extremely important in all aspects. I mean, in life in general, but certainly here, you know, you need to communicate, however that be, if it's the post game, if it's just that, you know, between sessions, because I know like for us, a lot of times we don't have the time a lot of times for the post game because, well, we play on Sunday nights and we end up playing till midnight. And then it's kind of like, guys, I got to go because I got to be up for work in the morning. You know, back when I was a kid or in my younger days, we would role play till like 3 a.m. And by that time, you're like, OK, it's over. Last combat. OK. And boom, you fall asleep. You know,
yeah, but we didn't have wives just waiting for us.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you just one way or another. But it's critically important to just communicate. Don't get hung up on the fact of, well, I don't really want to say these things to everybody because I don't want to hurt feelings. Because then it does, like you said, it festers and it boils and it gets to be a big deal. Whereas if you just took care of it, you know, you could probably have avoided it.
I agree with you. And I can't tell you how many problems in our prior gaming groups we probably would have avoided if we would have had the balls to talk to each other instead of acting like a bunch of bickering, tittering second grade girls.
Yeah. I mean, it's really funny how, you know, you can get a group of friends together and, you know, we're all good friends in just in life in general, but you'll have these kind of issues. I mean, everybody does in right. Every kind of a friendship, not just around the table. It's just funny, you know, if we would just talk and communicate and let the little things go.
Ooh, there's another big one. Let the little things go.
Yeah, exactly. Let the little,
I love,
you know,
the bickering comment there, Dan. Because like I said, Chad and I see each other every day. We see Pat twice a week. Let's say Pat runs a campaign and there's something that's just not right there. We have all week to bicker back and forth, come up with these ideas. But do we have the courage to say it to Pat
And see, that's one of the things where, you know, you can spend an entire week, and the more you talk about it, the more upset about it you'll get. That's what usually happens. Like, oh my God, oh, this bothers me even more than I thought it did.
Well, or on the other hand, over the course of the week, we get it off our chest. So by the time we roll in on Sunday, we don't care.
It can be one way or another. Or, yeah, like I said, it could be to the point where by the time you come in next week, the first thing you do is you come in and punch me in the face.
Let me give you guys three things. I'm going to try to rapid fire through them because we're hitting up against time here. But we probably won't. Three things that cannot be solved by communication. These are the last three of the seven things I came up with as game killers. But number one, which is actually number five on the list, the GM has run out of ideas.
The new GM.
Well, maybe. But the players are enjoying the campaign. They want to keep it going. They like their characters. But the GM has simply run out of interest in or steam for or ideas for the game. Now, of course, if you switch to a new GM, that means that guy's not GMing more, is now a player, and a different player is now the GM. You've just possibly broken the dynamic everyone was enjoying.
Yep, you got a different feel to it because you have a different guy running it.
And precisely. You cannot necessarily recreate that game. In a situation like that, the only thing I think you can do...
Buy ideas?
Well,
have... Buy pre-written adventures?
Exactly. Look for other sources of inspiration. Maybe take a short break. I don't recommend long breaks, and I'll get to that. That's number seven on the list. But take a short break. Give them some time to think about ideas. Or, you know what? Let the GM vent. Let the players tell him why they're having so much fun, and let the GM say why he's sick of the game. And the course is that the GM may come up with some ideas or re-find that inspiration. Let's talk about Fear the Boot, and let's pretend it's a game. We went into, I think it was Gen Con of 2008, pretty frustrated and downtrodden, ran into a bunch of fans who told us they were enjoying the show, and that gave us new energy. Mm-hmm. And we went back and have done another year and a couple months since then, are still going strong because we found that energy, that enthusiasm, that inspiration all over again. And if your players are enjoying the game more than you are, then maybe really all you need to do is hear from them why. And you'll find inspiration. Or if they say to you, man, we really love that one NPC and you did nothing with him. Well, wait a minute. If I develop that thing, there's a whole different direction we can go with this.
I'd say not just why, though. Ask them, what would you like to do with your character? Let them throw ideas out.
Yeah, I was about to say that because this is something that actually I did. And I think this is easier to do if you're in a long-running campaign, certainly. You know, you get to that point, ask your characters just what you said. Surely they're going to have some side projects that they've maybe been working on. Like, you know, for me, perfect example. I was a paladin. I had a keep or something like that I was working on, or I had some inner church politics that I wanted to check up on, family issues, whatever else. So you get to the end of an adventure, or he doesn't necessarily have the next one planned. You could say, well, you guys are back at home now. What do you guys want to look into? And you know, at that point, you've probably got a table full of characters that probably have something that they want to look into, and you can go with that. And that really kind of turns the table on you as the GM to be more of the player in the fact that if that's the way you're going to approach that session, you're going to be doing things on the fly. And it's almost like you're getting your cues from the players instead of the other way around. And that could be a good thing for the GM. It freshens things up there too. And it also gives you some time to think about another adventure, or maybe like you were just saying, that bring something to the front that you'd never even considered. And like, I can run with this. This is new, fresh, different.
It also gives you a glimpse into their heads. Mm-hmm. If they say, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to do with the character, then you know that's what they're kind of enjoying.
Exactly. That's what they want to do. Okay, this is the kind of communication I need from you guys, you know.
A GM does need to recharge his batteries. And what does that is people telling him that they're enjoying the game, that they're loving a game, and this is what they love about the game. This is incumbent upon the players to do this. It isn't incumbent upon the GM to do that. Because what's the GM supposed to do? Go to his players after a game and say, listen, I want you guys to tell me how great I am.
Yeah. I don't even say that. I think you just need to go to players and say, you know, okay.
Why do you love me?
No, let's look at your character. You've been working on this so far. What is your end goal for your character? What do you want to get to?
Yeah,
and
that
just
seems like
get very, some ideas.
That seems, I mean, and that is a good plan. That is something that should be done. But I also think that GMs need an ego boost. They are trying to entertain people. One of their goals is to express themselves creatively, but also to get you guys to have fun.
As a man that's a career GM, I'm going to 100% agree with Chad. One of the biggest frustrations I have, it's not just in role-playing games, we'll keep role-playing games, that's what this podcast is about, is what I call the baby bird mentality. That there's someone there who is just going to flip their head back, open their beak, they want you to go out, get the worm, eat the worm, digest the worm, and then vomit it right back into their mouth, and they expect they're going to do nothing. I've been in games with players who's like, I'm not going to look at the rule book. I'm not going to look at any setting information. And I'm not talking like pages and pages. I'm talking like even like paragraphs. You create my character for me. And it kind of gets this point of like, I got a better idea. Why don't you just stay home? Yeah. You apparently have no investment in what's going on here. And I hate that baby bird mentality. Players, you have a role to play in keeping this game alive. There's a great blog post that Wayne wrote, which if you look down our blog, you should find this right below this episode, about first-time GMing and what that was like. And I write in a comment back to that about how I, as a player during his first-time GMing, did some things to help him out because it was incumbent upon me to help keep Wayne's game going. Mm-hmm. And if you as a player think all you have to do is roll up unprepared, you hardly even remembered to wear pants to the game.
That's why I've always said I love running a game with Johnny G in it, because Johnny G knows, because Johnny G's been there. And I can look over at John and I can say, hey, man, I'm sorry, I got... And then he's like, dude, I understand. You know, gotta do what you gotta do.
That's the cool thing about your evolving GM game is, if you do that once with your players, then everybody knows what it's like to be in that seat. If their week, you know, crashes on them, like mine almost crashed. Dan had it with, I was a deer in the headlights for what he was going to do next, and he threw me the bone.
That was the entire purpose of the revolving GM game. I had a group of people who had never role played before, maybe only one or two of them had role played before. They weren't very nice. They weren't good players in relation to the GM.
They weren't courteous.
They weren't courteous because they didn't know. They just had never been there before.
It's a lot easier to bitch about a movie than it is to make a good one.
Exactly.
And
that's what the revolving GM. Right. For 2 weeks, it forced them to do it. And you know, I wasn't a dick about it. I wasn't pulling all the asshole player stuff. I didn't have to. They had a whole bunch of other people doing it for them. And they saw, and it was great. And afterwards, a couple of them came to me and they said, I understand. And all the stuff that was pissing me off went away. Mm-hmm. It was great. Yeah.
Let me toss up. We got two more left. This next one, I think we can rapid fire. You guys may have things to say on it. Probably won't. Distraction by another more appetizing title. That you're deep into a game until...
It's the number one game killer with all of our groups.
The grass is greener. Mm-hmm. That you're into a game, but somebody pops up a new idea, and everybody latches on to it. Man, wouldn't it be cool if we were playing
Ghostbusters?
This?
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Transformers?
Ghostbusting Transformers.
But we came up, at least in my prior gaming group, with a simple rule that we probably need to use in this one as well. It is a forbidden topic. Yes. You are simply not allowed to talk about a potential new game during a current campaign. And if somebody says, hey, I was thinking about running, it is incumbent upon everyone else at the table to say, stop.
Yep.
Let it go. When this game dies, you can run something next, whatever it is.
You're in the queue next.
We don't even need to talk about it. Just forget about it.
I always like, though, an amendment to that rule of if you were the next GM, for sure. I mean, it's scheduled. When this game ends at this point, you're taking over. You can throw out a teaser. Like, you can put on the table, it's like, okay, ghosts.
Or
ninjas.
Or something like that. Guys, we're not going to talk about it, but just be thinking about Forgotten Realms characters.
Yeah.
Or something Dogs like, and the Vineyards characters. Yeah. So whatever.
Just throw that.
We're not even
going to
talk about it, but just let you know, this is what I'm running. Just be thinking about it. We're not going to discuss it, because if we discuss it, we're going to start building excitement for that. Instead of where we are, we're going to start looking at the other pasture, so we're just not going to go there. Last one that I came up with is major gaps in time. Something came up where the entire group, holidays are a real killer for this, but something came up where the entire group could not get together for too long. And by the time you get back, no one really remembers the feel of their character. They don't remember what was going on in the plot. They're not emotionally invested anymore. it's the same reason I personally, like, I cannot play halfway through a video game, put it down, come back 6 months later and pick up where I left off. That's, I have to start over again.
That's why I have a hard time beating video games until recently when they've shrunk
down. That's why I've never been really short. See, I was thinking about that, too. I think that's exactly why they're doing it. It hit me this week. It's for people like us, Winks. I have the same problem. I think they realize that. Well, the attention span of human beings.
It's for the kids, ADD culture. We
have the attention span of a gnat anymore, so that's why they're doing it. It's like, you know what? We can do this. They can get done with it. They play it. They'll buy more. And it's a win-win for everybody. It's a short game. That means they get done with it quicker. That means they got to buy another one.
Yep.
Anyway, what were you saying, Dan?
You know, Dan, I think this is probably the most painful way to have your game die, too. Because, like I said, the...
Well, it's the most unwanted.
Let's go back to the painful way to play a character. Yeah. I mean, I am with that in my current character. I've requested a couple of times in our current game. It's like, I'm done with this character, guys.
Mm. Well, I think the gaps in time is the most painful because it's the only one nobody wanted.
Yeah.
There is no other problem in the game except... This weekend, three people are off on a wedding. Next weekend, two people have to go on a trip. The following weekend, somebody's on a trip and one other guy's sick.
Every other one, somebody has lost interest. In this one, it's just, this is great, and then it's kind of falling
apart. Well, this is sort of like the first one you're out of, too. I mean, this one, the first one, it's, you know, it's life happens, and it's kind of unavoidable. The best advice for that is to, if you are able to, before that kind of thing happens, get to a rapid, you know, get to a stopping point, a wrapping up point, like finish an adventure so that at least, you know, when you come back, you were at the end there and you can start on a brand new adventure with a little bit of this is what happened.
Yeah. I'm going to be completely honest with you guys. That is the one thing that bothers me about my gaming experience so far is my very first game didn't have a wrap up. There are all these mysteries there that I had spent months and months trying to figure out what you had planned. And, you know, I completely and totally hooked on that story, and I still don't know what happened.
I'll say a combination of number one, personal drama and burnout, and number seven, gaps in time where too many people couldn't make it and ended up killing the campaign.
And I think that you're going to experience that a lot. I think everybody... Mm-hmm. All role players, that's just something you deal with.
It was my first time experiencing it, so it was even more so. That's why I think this is the one that would bother people the most, because in my experience, that was my first campaign. Right. I didn't know how campaigns ended. I was wondering, you know, you guys always talk about all these other games. How do you go from, you know, I've played some games. I've played some other games here and
welcome
there.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, I understand that now, but for my first experience having had that happen... Instead of everybody losing interest, it was just everybody is really into this game and outside forces.
And that's why I like the long running campaigns, because what we would do is, you know, we had this long running campaign as the basis, and we'd play that. But then if we want to play something else, we would just literally take a break from that one, play this game, whatever, and then we'd go right back to the old long-standing campaign, because that's what it was. It was the long flowing river that's there, so you'd go back to it. Now, not everybody has that. We don't in this group, certainly. I mean, we don't have that, and you know, so. But that is a good one. I think it's, if you've got it, that's fantastic.
To close this out, like, the one piece of advice that we have that's at the center of solving most of these is proactive communication.
Yep.
Talk about it. And be willing to do what it's going to take to solve the problem, and you will have a long and healthy game.
No matter how painful the conversation is talking about it.
To me, the conversations never have to get painful. If you have a 10-minute-long conversation with your friends at the end of every gaming session, you will knock out 90% of these problems before they become big and uncomfortable. Right.
Yep, because those conversations are going to happen. It's just a matter of, are you part of the conversation if you're running the game?
And the person who has to push that is the game master. Whoever's running it, he's the one who needs to say, okay, stop, let's talk about this. Let's have a post game. What did you guys think?
They do, but again, you need to be proactive as gamers, and don't rely on the GM to do it. When he doesn't do it, you need to step up and start the communication yourself.
Mm-hmm. And this was the best advice Chris has ever given an entire episode.
I agree. I love Chris's input. He was easy to edit. There were no birds, crickets, or farting.
Yes. And there was no like wild old man tangent jokes where he throws this old man joke and you got to be 80 years old to get the reference.
That's right. Our tangents are young men tangents.
That's right. 30-something tangents are awesome.
So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Later days.
This has been a production of Fear the Booth, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.